Hey gang, it's your boy Wes from Brothering Around, and this episode of Brothering Around is brought to you by Audible. They're your Amazon friends giving you audiobooks, and if you go to audibletrial.com/brotheringaround, you can get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook to keep forever. Give you a little sampling of that, get to see if it's for you. And hey, if you have something that can listen to Brothering Around, you have something that can listen to the Audible audiobooks. So head over to audibletrial.com/brotheringaround, get your free audiobook on the house and your free 30-day trial of Audible at audible.com. Oh, so the Battle Royale is in the history books. We are back to the standard. Brothering Around, I am Wes Gardner, your host, Mr. Commie the Hobo. And over there is Mr. Nerd in the Bay himself, Marco Flores.
My legs.
My legs.
My legs and my stomach, my everything.
Your everything. Ow. Oh, so we talked a little bit before the show, but you had quite the exercise session.
Like Wes said, we were talking before we started recording, and dude, like I was saying, cardio, the school that I go to, Estellar's Martial Arts, the cardio kickboxing seems to be much more rougher than the actual Muay Thai class.
Because
I guess it's based more on more of the physical conditioning. So I was just telling Wes that like there was this one section where there was six of us, and a set of three had to do bag work, and the other three had to hold the bags. One round was speed round kicks. One station was speed round kicks. Another station was 1-2 punching, like nonstop. Another one was high knees, and then we did three rounds rotating, and then in the middle of that, like we hit, like the people that were holding the bags had to do some work too. So while they were resting up like 30 seconds, we had to do like squat jumps every single round. And we did that from like, I want to say like 30 minutes straight of just this rotation, station work, and like us doing squat jumps. So like it was like nonstop. Oh my God. Legs are dead.
That sounds dreadful.
It was the worst. It was like literally like leg day, but like on squat jumps. Like how wrestlers do like thousands of squats.
Yeah.
And then just add the fact that I'm taking like kickboxing, so they're kicking your legs too.
For sure.
Yeah. So like I feel like I have no legs, but I'm walking on something. So. Anyways,
yeah, you're going to be walking on tree trunks come like two, 3 weeks from now. Your body recovers gets used to it,
I guess. And it's weird because it's like the second day for me feels the worst because I feel like I get more mobility. I get more mobility. It's like, okay, I feel a little better. But when I start walking, the sting is just feels much worse than like after hour one or after like day one.
Oddly enough, there is actual science behind that. So I think what you're experiencing is what's called DOMS, which is delayed onset muscle soreness. And it's usually on bigger muscle groups. So your legs being the biggest muscle in your body totally makes sense. So that's one of those deals that, you'll do leg, like in the bodybuilding time, you'll go do free squats, you'll go do leg press, you'll go do leg extensions, you'll do all these exercises. And the next day you wake up and you're like, you know what? That's not so bad. I'm feeling pretty good, feeling pretty, ready to get with it. But then the day after that, all of that just deep, like it feels like your bones are sore, and you're like, oh, you're like, oh my God,
kill me now.
Yes, me now. Exactly.
Take me. It's okay. Yeah. I don't have to wait for this game to come out. You can just take me now.
Just take me. Just write it on the headstone that I love everyone. It's fine,
dude.
Oh. Yeah. But it's funny you talked about the physical fitness stuff, because I was talking with somebody before we got online and started recording about how ridiculous The Rock looked during, because he's always kind of looked ridiculous. Like he's Jack dude. Like, you know, he's on something.
Up at like 4 a.m. every single day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, the guy doesn't sleep.
Like 3 to 2 hours of sleep or something.
Yeah. 2 hours of sleep. And he's a multi-billionaire. I mean, the guy's crazy, but there was a certain time period in his career where he looked especially jacked for no good reason. And it was during his time that built up for like Once in a Lifetime, him versus John Cena, WrestleMania, I think it was 28. Because during that time, he also did Fast Five, the movie, and then he did Pain and Gain.
Yeah, Pain and Gain, that's the one.
And I'll tell you what, man, he looks ridiculous. Pain and Gain. You guys see those Pain and Gain pictures? And it looks like he's about to eat everybody on set. Like, it's like they let a gorilla in, and he's huge. Like, he is like roid huge. Because, you know, back in the day, of course, a WWEF at the time weren't as crazy about testing for steroids. But then you ended up with, you know, half of your roster died of a heart attack. So you're like, oh, maybe we should not do these steroid things. So it was ridiculous. Like, I saw pictures of him, and, you know, whenever I first started bodybuilding, those were the things I was looking at. I was looking at that and like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the 70s for like inspiration. Like, okay, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to do my thing. And then I look at it now and I'm like, those guys are roidy magoos, man. Just because I know what it takes now. Like, I know, like, looking at it, I'm like, yeah, they were on some juice. They got a little bit of that vitamin S going on there. But, right. I mean, they look great. And, hey, to be 1,000% clear with everyone, if they were paying me $10 million to be in a movie, you bet your ass I'd be on steroids. Like, without question, I would spend a few hundred grand on a doctor and be like, Doc, listen, I'm going to be on a giant screen in front of, 8 billion people on the planet or something.
Yeah.
Like, make me look like I could lift a house. Like, just whatever it takes. And that's the deal. I do want to talk to you about this. What are your thoughts?
Lift a, ambulance truck.
Yeah. I'll just Roman Reigns and then like lift it.
I'm not done with you.
Oh, get back here, boy. And then flip it. Oh, man. Yeah. But what are your thoughts? Like, sincerely, what are your thoughts on performance enhancing drugs, whether it's in like baseball or like bodybuilding or wrestling or like just anything really? Like, what do you think of them? Like, what do you think there's a place for them? Do you think it should just be completely banned outright?
I mean, with sports and in general, like you see those acts of like feats, so like things like you think that shouldn't be done, and
we had this
perception of like that's the human body, that's the, you know, unbreakable will, whatever you want to call it, but deep down if you take a look at it and focus, like you kind of notice that's where like the performance enhancing stuff comes in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I'm very middling on it. Like, as cool as it is to see like these like, unspeakable things happening, I kind of know that that's probably, you know, because like, you know, they're taking some stuff and part of me is like, I wish, you know, stuff would be out, like guys would be used without like not using it, you know.
Sure.
But then again, I'm very like in the middle about it. Then again, you won't see those like, those unspeakable feats, like Barry Bonds and Barry Bonds and the Giants, like hitting home runs every single night when he was like playing with the Giants and like doing all those home runs like consecutively and, you know, getting all those like accolades and stuff. But you know, when you come to find out that he's been like, he was using like some sort of steroids just to be able to hit harder and stuff like that, like Mark McGwire and all that, and Sammy Sosa and all that stuff. And then of course we talk about wrestling, so like you see those guys bigger than life.
Yeah.
You know, general person will think, you know, oh my goodness, they work so hard, but you know, like people like us, like you know, like a Jinder Mahal, like you just,
yeah.
I think there's something going on there. And and Wes, you specifically like look at him, and you specifically like, you know, have like a focused, like seeing eyeglass on that.
My radar. You know, like, that sensor starts, that red light comes on, and I'm like, whoop, we gotta we got a hit right here. On the old Roy DeMagoo radar.
Again, I'm very, very middling about it. Not maybe I'll lean one side and one day and I'll probably lean the other side.
I'm kind of with you, because in my whole deal is I think it's slightly of a misnomer whenever people are like, well, you know, these athletes are using steroids and that's not fair. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what if all of them use steroids? Yeah. Like, what if all things were equal and like you could use whatever you wanted to? Make it like the Hunger Games, make it like where nothing's really off limits. So like how fast could a guy on PCP run compared to a guy, you know what I mean? Like we want to see the spectacle of this stuff, but okay. You want to know an industry that actually kind of has a performance enhancing drug problem, but nobody talks about it because the guys aren't jacked?
Mm-hmm.
NASCAR.
Really?
You want to know why? Because they need something for focus, because you're driving freaking 300 miles an hour. And
like for how many laps?
And the thing is, your body is taking such a punishment in that car because you're hitting, you're almost going as fast as like a jet. You know what I mean? Like your body is rumbling in that car and you need to take something in order to recover. Your body has to like come back from stuff like that.
Yeah, you know what? Okay.
Because they got to race a lot. I mean, they have preliminaries. They have.
Yeah, they have circuits.
They have circuits. I mean, it's a full on deal, man. It's a year long deal. They don't have an off season really.
That makes sense.
One of those, that way. You know what I mean? Yeah. So just because these people aren't jacked doesn't mean they're not taking a little bit of juice. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. It's like, it's so weird. And also, okay, perfect example. If you go look at professional bodybuilders, like IFBB pros, and you go look at natural bodybuilders, it is a world of difference. An absolute world of difference, because you're talking about, okay, a natural, like, okay, I'll say that, you know, I do bodybuilding style things. I'm weighing in right now at exactly 215 pounds, and I'm probably, 25%, 26% body fat. Like, I'm not shredded by any means of the, I have a kind of a barrel chest, like, I don't have a six pack, and I don't give a shit. I just like the look of being a big Thor looking Viking. Like, that's what I'm going for, right? I just want to be a big dude. Like, I walk in and people are like, that guy's a bouncer or something, because he's massive. Like, that was my aesthetic. I was like, I don't care about a six-pack abs and stuff. So, you know, I'm wearing in there. And so if I cut weight and I wanted a six-pack, I'd be weighing about 190, 185 pounds. I mean, I would have to lose 30 pounds, you know, in order to like make weight to go stage ready. And then if I'm a buck, you know, 85, a buck 90, I'm not that big anymore. Like, I might look shredded, but I'm not some jacked dude. So on the natural scale, you have natural bodybuilders who are hitting, they're coming in stage ready at, you know, 210 pounds at like 10% body fat. So these guys are pretty jacked. Like, you look at that guy walking down the street and you're like, oh my God. Professional bodybuilders, they come in stage ready the day of the Olympia weighing 300 pounds at like 6% body fat, probably less, like 4%.
Yeah.
Enough that you could like see their heartbeat in their chest. Like, they have nothing but muscle. You know what I'm saying? So it's a world of difference. It's like, take two natural bodybuilders and you make one pro bodybuilder. But everybody is on the juice in pro bodybuilding. Like, if you're not on the juice, you're not a pro. That's just how, that's the game, man. Like, sorry.
Like, I mean, and there's different levels of it too. Like, like you're saying, like, there's There's levels where, you know, it really shows that, you know, you're using something, and others, they're like, you're really not, like the example you using NASCAR. And then there's also like examples where it's used for medical purposes, like for terms of like, you know, having surgeries of whatever, you know, like, I'm hearing it on TV shows, but like, I didn't realize that that's a thing that's a possible like use is for steroids. Like, I don't know if it's like for like, you know, blood flow or like, you know, regenerative type of thing, but I heard it gets used a lot. So like, okay, well, I guess there's, you know, it's like, it's not like so much black and white, but there's like a lot of gray areas about terms like about using steroids. So
yeah, it's like it's a kind of a newer treatment for people that suffered from like muscular dystrophy or something,
right?
Like if their muscle mass is wasting away because of something, whether it's like a tapeworm or, you know, I mean, just something, mm-hmm. some medical condition that's causing this dystrophy to happen. Yeah. They will get set. Another thing, guys, after they get the age of like 40, will go to their doctor and request like, oh, I have low testosterone. They'll say, they'll say, hey, I need to be on testosterone replacement therapy. Guess what mm-hmm. that is? Those are steroids that they give you.
Yeah.
That is actually, because all a steroid is, at the end of the day, an anabolic steroid, is just a hormone. They're giving you mm-hmm. a version of testosterone. That's what it is. So, I mean, and to cut weight, they'll give you something like cortisol not cortisol. That's the stress hormone. But they'll give you something like trenbolone. Let's see. Trenbolone is the form of testosterone. And then, what is the other one? It starts with a C. Clenbuterol, which is interesting because albuterol and clenbuterol are asthma medications.
Okay.
So the whole thing is really bizarre.
What did Brock Lesnar get caught with?
I think it was clenbuterol.
Like asthma, right?
Yeah, I think it was clenbuterol. And then he said, I take it for my inhaler. And they were like, you took enough to kill a horse. Like, there's no way you had this amount in your inhaler, dude.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are kind of the old, and those are for old, like, things from, like, Germany, I think, from the 70s mm-hmm. and 60s. I was just thinking about that, and I was talking with someone. I was like, The Rock looked stupid. Like, mm-hmm. it was hilarious because I saw Pain and Gain in the theaters because I was like, okay, it's a comedy, Mark Wahlberg, and this is right when The Rock started becoming big movie star guy. I mean, he did Scorpion King. He did like Tooth Fairy. He did all these other things. And then like, what was the other one? He was in some of those old ones.
Get Smart.
Get Smart. Yes. And then it wasn't Walking Tall, was it?
Walking Tall was one. And then
The Rundown.
Rundown. There it is.
Yeah. I just picture him with a 2x4 in his hand. Like, that's what I think it was. was kind of, you know, he was in some movies. He was in also like Southside Tales or Southland Tales or whatever it was from the Donnie Darko director. And then, so he was in some stuff. But that's what Fast Five, right. Pain and Gain, that's when he started really like, okay, this guy's an actual big deal in Hollywood now. Yeah. And I remember seeing it, and there's a scene. You know, Mark Wahlberg's there, and he's a gym coach guy, professional or personal trainer. And then Anthony Mackie, I think, is the other guy in it.
Oh, Falcon.
Yeah. And he's in it, and then he's, you know, joined the gym, and he's good friends with Mark Wahlberg in the movie. Yeah. And then they're like, we need someone in on our con to go steal money from somebody. And, you know, the whole bit about being bank robbers or a thief against someone for insurance fraud or something. And
Kurt then, Angle was in that movie, wasn't he?
Do what?
Kurt Angle was in that movie, wasn't he?
Maybe so.
Yeah, I think he is. Like, he wasn't like a known cast member, but like,
he was probably like a yuppie or like an extra in the gym or something. Like, I have to go back and rewatch it. That's funny if he is. But then, you know, they show this and you see Mark Wahlberg and he's coming in pretty good shape. And, you know, Mackie's putting on some weight. You know, so I mean, they're coming in, they're looking good, they're looking a little jacked and everything. Yeah. And then the scene where they meet The Rock is basically like, oh, that guy over there, he just got back from prison. And they turn the camera And he takes up the entire screen. Like, the camera lens isn't wide enough to get his back. You know what I mean? I'm like, good God. In the theater, I burst out laughing whenever it showed him. And I was like, this guy's going to eat everybody. Like, there's no way. This is not real. Yeah. This can't be real. That has to be some sort of a Photoshop, like Adobe After Effects or something, just on what he looked like. But no, that was genuinely him. And he's walking around probably at 280. I was like, good God. He was like Brock Lesnar big, man. It was stupid. Like, thankfully, he slimmed down a little. He's gotten back to around the 235, 240. Yeah. But yeah, for pain and gain, it almost makes me laugh because I was like, yeah, homie's on some juice. He's on a high C right there. Just give him some juicy juice boxes.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of that. I'm like, man, I didn't remember Rock being that big. But
yeah.
And then I see pictures of him now. I'm like, okay, yeah, he's starting to look what looks to seem like normal for Rock.
Yeah, right, like actual Rock size. But I mean, he was always a big old boy. He was, oh God, that picture of him with a little mustache at 16.
His
shoulders are super wide, you know? But I guess that's what happens when your dad's Rocky Johnson and your granddad's High Chief Peter Maivia.
Yeah, the Moan family, man.
Oh, good genetics.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, I just thought that was funny. I saw him and I was like, God damn, why is he so big? Like, it just caught me off guard and made me laugh. Right. But you're going to have those Rock legs. You keep doing your jump squats and shit.
I guess so, man. I guess get that jumping on like a stack of like whatever high.
Right. You'll do a, as you walk into the grocery store, the tiles will crack.
Yeah.
Like under your feet. Right. Just be a beast.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Yeah, dude. But yeah, so we got pretty good feedback on our JRPG Battle Royale stuff. Yeah, people like the outcome. They said they said of course that Final Fantasy VII would win. Like they're kind of snarky on it. But hey, it is what it is.
Right.
The proof is in the pudding. It was up to fate. Fate decided this.
And if it was decided in round one.
That's right. Yeah. First go round.
Yep.
Oh man. But I think last week we mentioned that this week we would talk about some indie games.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Stuff that like it's on the on basically your radar, but like maybe isn't like nobody's talking about these like sort of games.
Yeah.
And I have a couple, and then I basically asked around, and then Todd just ballistered me with all these
nice stuff that
he has his eye on. I was like, man. But I guess he lives on Kickstarter or something. But yeah, we just reached out because, you know, indie games, you know, there's some gems out there, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you're like aware, right? It doesn't have to be like the AAA all the time, AAA games, but yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff out there that people need to know about.
Yeah. I found one that I was interested in. And so, because we talked about doing this idea, what, like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, like something to talk about after the whole
battle royale
bracket.
And so at the time, there was the brand new release, early access on Steam called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and I was like, you know what, that's going to be my pick. I hope this game does pretty well. It's set up kind of like DayZ and H1Z1, the sort of like literally a battle royale to where, you know, it's you versus 50 or you versus 100 people, and then you're just because I played DayZ on stream before, where they like basically you spawn on an island and then you have to scavenge for for DayZ, you had to scavenge for food, you had to get guns, you had to find ammo, all that stuff, and then it was PvP, world PvP, so like everyone's out to get you and you had to run away from zombies. So basically, at the time, whenever we had this idea, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds just hit early access on Steam, and basically it took that idea and condensed it. So it's, you know, one versus 100, basically. Everyone's out for themselves. So instead of DayZ, where you have to worry about hunger, and then you're low on stamina, and you have to find, you know, a compass, and you need to do all the, you know, like very in-depth stuff. It makes all that stuff automatic. So like you start with a map, you have a radar, you start in a plane and you basically skydive out of a plane, and then you land somewhere on the island, and no matter where you land, there's like an AK, and you know, there's a gun within walking distance, and all the ammo's right next to the gun, and there's no food. You don't have to worry about hunger. You don't have to worry about anything like that. Basically, it, they took that formula and condensed it down to where everyone gets a gun within 10 seconds. You know, games last for 15 minutes. You know, and as time gets, every 2 or 3 minutes, the play area closes. So, like, the play field gets smaller, making people, like, it forces them to go to a central location. So instead of just everyone hanging out for 15 minutes and nothing ever happens, they put up red zones. Like, okay, now your red zone, just like Battle Royale, now your red zone is A7. So you check on your map and you're like, shit, I'm at A7. I better move in the next 10 seconds or they're going to bomb me. So it keeps people moving. It keeps people going, and it kind of condenses everyone to the center. I was like, yeah, you know, that's going to be my pick. You know, I played a little bit of it. I had a lot of fun. It's very tense and terrifying and scary. Really cool. I hope this game does well. Well, I think it sold over 5 million copies now.
I think it'll be okay.
Yeah. So now I'm like, well, that can't be my indie pick anymore, because this is like ridiculous. It may have been like 2 million. Let me check. But yeah, so it's a big, big hit.
That's cool, man.
But yeah, I love that kind of game, because it is super tense, and it basically takes the deathmatch formula. That's all it is, really, is it's a form of deathmatch, and then the map kind of moves around a little. But the way it's presented makes it feel terrifying, because you're landing, and I mean, there's times where, you know, you'll see people jumping out of the plane, like parachuting. And you and a person will be parachuting towards the same spot. So then it becomes a scramble when you both land. Who's going to get the gun first? Like, it's crazy. It really does have that sort of vibe to it. And I was like, man, this game is... I there's something special about that idea that it keeps multiplayer dynamic. And instead of, oh, here's your map... And, you know, you're going to learn the ins and outs of, like, a Counter-Strike or a Call of Duty map. And you're going to learn how to double jump and, you know, rebound off the wall and 360 no-scope and stuff.
Yeah.
Instead of that, it's more so, I mean, your map is miles and miles and miles big. Square kilometers, even. And so, I mean, you have 4 or 5 islands within the island. Like, that's how big this is. So you could play this game for 200 hours and never see the whole island. You know, just because of the way the fast pacing, the way that it condenses randomly to a specific spot on the map, like no round is going to be the same. So it's not like you can necessarily learn the map. It's just like you got to kind of deal with it and get better with your instincts. And like, what do I think a human being is going to do? And if I'm shooting at them from, you know, 400 yards away, how far ahead do I lead them with the bullet or whatever? Like, you have to get that primal instinct, and there's something really cool about that.
That's cool, man.
But yeah, that's my pick. At least this time. Cool. I got to dig around a little bit. So what was yours? What was one of yours?
So I basically had two that came to mind. The first one was a beat-em-up. And I grew up on beat-em-up. So like any beat-em-up in this day and age, like I have to know and hear about it, like what's going on. So I'm going to link you right now. This one is called The Takeover. It's basically influenced by like games like Final Fight and Streets of Rage. There, you know, I think I linked you to the Steam page where the trailer, you just, you know, trailers in Steam, they just play autoplay, right?
Yeah.
So basically this game is like three basically cops, as far as I know, with terms of the story. And that's as far as I actually do know about the story. They're just beating people up in the streets, and they have guns on them. Like, I think the strong guy in the group has like a bazooka on him, but God. Yeah, he wants to fight with fists. It's very like police, but like they're police characters, but like, you know, they're fighting in the streets, like your Streets of Rage. Yeah, yeah, you have your basic balance person. I think Ethan Weathers. He's doing like your usual, like, you know, balance, like straightforward fighting, and then all of a sudden he's throwing a fireball and shooting a gun. Like, yeah. it gets really crazy with his style. And then you have your fast character, which is a woman, and then you have your strong guy. It's just the fact that a beat-em-up in this day and age is, I want to say very rare, because character action games have basically taken over. True. And
true.
And games like this, like I miss playing beat 'em up games, and like if I can find anything that's close to a beat 'em up, I'm right there. Yeah. Because like usually beat 'em ups is when you play with another person in the same room. Now in this day and age, we're playing online and stuff, but this game is just like a throwback to like games like Streets of Rage and Final Fight and whatever other beat 'em up that you can think of is just,
you know what that thing. Game reminds me of whenever you were explaining the premise. Do you remember that old PlayStation 1 game called Freedom Force? Or
yeah, I do.
Fighting
yeah,
Force?
That, like that, yeah. Fighting Force, Freedom. Yeah, Fighting Force is what you're talking about.
Yeah, the one where like Duder had his the big guy had the kind of undershirt on.
Yeah.
You could pick up stuff in the environment. I remember playing the hell out of that game. But because you were like, they were kind of like the cops and enforcers, but they were on the streets dueling it out. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like Fighting Force.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm remembering now that's a PS1 game. I wish that those kind of, then again, when you play, when you think beat 'em ups, it's kind of the same scenario as well, like urban streets and rough and tumble, trying to defeat a gang. And then when you try to mix it up, or like maybe back in the day it becomes a hack and slash, so like there's nuances within the genre, I'm trying to think of a game, like I guess maybe like Maximo for the PlayStation 1, or Brave Fencer Musashi or something like that. But yeah, like this game, like I'm totally all for it. It's just a really good throwback. And then let me see. There was another one that I just heard about this game like really recently. And the game, it's not so much of a indie, rather than like, I guess maybe not enough people are talking about it. Like not enough people were talking about Yakuza. It was the game Absolver.
Yeah.
So basically, from what I understand of the game Absolver, is that it's set in like a unique world where let me see.
So
like of a planet? Or like
So what I've seen of Absolver, it looks very similar to like a current day reimagining of Bushido Blade.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Not so much of like a one hit kill sort of thing, but you're having like martial arts duels.
And that's
the basis of the combat in this game. And then with the combat, it's not so much of, you know, press buttons to do your attacks. You have like combat cards, in your list of skills. So like you come out with like let's say like a basic list of cards, and then as you progress through the game, you know, you're gonna collect all these other cards, you know, either by clearing some areas or like fighting other people, because when you fight other people and they have a technique that they know but you don't know, you can basically observe how they do it, and then eventually you learn that.
Oh, that's technique, cool.
Which is a pretty cool thing, right? So like you're observing their moves, and like you say, like maybe you got defeated by them, and then you can learn that move, like sort of thing. Like that's freaking awesome. So like then again, it gets added to your skill list, and then with this game, it's semi MMO because, or I think of it more like the Soul series where you're playing it pretty much single player until like you maybe you hit some spots where you probably need like a helper. So you request the shadow or something like that. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Yeah. So maybe along the lines of like the Soul series. Yeah. And then at the same time, when you encounter people in this world, in this game, that are other players, you can't speak to them. So it's kind of like the game you were talking about, kind of like DayZ, where you're not sure if you can trust this person.
Yeah. Right.
But yet, you guys are going to the same area. Maybe you guys can form like a temporary partnership.
Yeah, this makeshift then, like, alliance.
Yeah, makeshift alliance. And then like maybe you'll clear the stage or whatever. And then when the loot comes in, maybe that other person can betray you and take all the loot. Or maybe, you know, you guys share the loot. But you won't know until you actually, reach the branch out and say like, you know what, we're going to do this together. Or yeah. you just fight them then and there, like either before you even start this adventure or, you know, try to clear the level or just it's very, yeah, it's very like, okay, very Survivor-esque, right?
Yeah. That's cool. Like I like that sort of evolution of multiplayer to where it's,
yeah,
now you have to start thinking almost a metagame style thing.
Yeah, like, you do.
And I wonder if that got started from those, like, sometimes we give grief to MOBA games, you know, like Dota and League of Legends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's sort of where that really started coming into fruition. Like, it's almost like the poker thing, right? You're not playing your hand of cards, you're playing your opponent.
Yeah, you're not showing your tell. Yeah.
Yeah, so... But yeah, I really like that because with like the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, that is very much a game of like you have to use your instinct, and then right at that end, you know, let's say you make a partnership with somebody, and then there's only two survivors left, and you're looking down the barrel. It's like, well, have you been watching that guy while you've been, you know, doing your thing, and you guys have been a team? Have you watched how he moves? Have you kind of seen what could take place?
You see like the small details that he's like either he's doing within like within the character he's playing the actions that he's doing, that the person's doing. Yeah.
That's really cool.
But yeah, like another part. Part of the game that I like is I know where it say like you're fighting another person, you know, you guys come to blows, you guys make an alliance, you guys become actually friends. That guy can become your student, right? Say you encounter a group of people, you can make your own dojo. Like you guys can learn all, like say like you the player character like know all of these moves, and you can teach it to your dojo. And what basically what this is basically just a guild, right? This is like
right, yes.
Basically, in its base, it's just a guild. But because you said it's a, you can make your own dojo. I'm like, oh man, I so want to be a part of like a dojo and like,
that's it.
Run this place, like
And it's all about the presentation, man. And that's same thing. It's like, who would have thought that, you know, a game like DayZ would change deathmatch? Because that's all it is.
Yeah.
It is just a deathmatch game. At the end of the day, you're playing a deathmatch map, one versus all, free for all, on a big map. That's all it is. But because of all the bells and whistles and the way they set up this like dystopia and stuff, you start feeling different about it. So yeah, sure, it's just a guild. And yeah, sure, it's just, you know, guild members. But now, you instead of having, you know, oh, here's our guild captain, it's, hey, here's our sensei.
It's our dojo master, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that hierarchy, even that tiny little shift, can be a world of difference.
Right?
That's really cool.
Like, yeah, man. That,
game developers are getting a lot smarter.
Yeah, these guys are from, these guys are like former Ubisoft developers, as far as I know.
Oh, nice.
Called Slow Clap.
Yeah. Yeah, see, indie game developers are kind of where it's at, in my opinion, because they aren't afraid to take the risks.
Yeah, They're gonna do the ideas like they may not even like give you like a big payout in terms of sales and stuff, but yeah. They just want to see that idea come to fruition.
Yes. And how does this work? And then let's say they do Absolver, and Absolver turns out kick-ass, which it sounds like it will. Mm-hmm. But then they get hired back on to do like the next Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Right.
So then it's like, okay, what did we learn from Absolver that would be awesome for Assassin's Creed?
That we could implement in Assassin's Creed.
So people always wonder, why are indie games important? And it's exactly that reason. Because you have these people pushing the envelopes of what is an idea that could sell. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to remember, Minecraft, not only an indie game, it was made by one person.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed the world.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the biggest fan of Notch as a human being, but like that guy, he the world
into an idea. Yeah.
He had the one thing and he made it happen. Now he's like in a castle surrounded by a moat or something. I don't know.
I think his next door neighbor is Jay-Z, as far as I remember.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah,
that's
like
amazing.
Something like that. I don't know.
He'll be on the next Empire State album.
Some sort of news. Right.
Yeah. We'll get Notch as a drop in on the next Jay-Z track with Rick Rubin producing
and DJ Khaled.
Oh
man!
If there's a just God, that will come to pass. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So let me try to bring up what I'm gonna try to be. Not fast. Oh, maybe a little fast, but Todd had a lot of stuff in terms indie radar stuff. So like he was saying, technically Friday the 13th was an indie game and also had a Kickstarter. True. So like he's all about Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And then he gets more into the board games. Let's see. He just said a lot. I was like, man, okay.
Yeah. Good God.
mainly it becomes Kickstarter games though. I go more of the tabletop route, like Pugmire, Changeling, the Dreaming 20th Anniversary Edition, Katanas and Trench Coats, Retro Modem Role Playing, Exploding Kittens, okay, The Resistance, Hostile Intent, and Hidden Agenda, Zombicide. You can keep listing more. Let's see, what else is this? Prince's Gambit, Casual Vampire. Okay. Card game. Let's see. The Seventh Guest board game. I know that's like an old thing.
Yeah.
Smack Talk Showdown. I believe it's like a wrestling Cards Against Humanity type game.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's wrestling with words. Yeah. It's a wrestling Cards Against Humanity game. So yeah, Todd is all about the indie stuff.
Apparently, man.
He has a lot of stuff on his radar. So
it's good.
Yeah, man.
And I've noticed that it's funny as like a lot of our friends and as we get older, I've seen the shift not only from like Todd but even from like Nitrobeard guys is they're going.
Oh, yeah, you guys are all about.
They're going all in on not only that, but they're like developing board games. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I mean, you got Brian Belita, you got Dave, Big Dave.
Yeah,
I mean, they're workshopping, prototyping stuff, and I mean, hell, they're doing Kickstarter goals for. We talked about Southern Monsters before.
That's right. Like
that stuff made funding there and back again. Man, they made ton of bank on that, and they're producing all this stuff.
You've been retweeting. You've been retweeting some other game, another game, right? Lately?
Yeah. And like, and I think it's one of, oddly enough, here, talk about coming full circle. One of the old Hobo Nation members is working on some indie stuff. Bomber is doing some,
some
good work. Yeah. And it's looking good, man. Like,
yeah. I saw very the animations.
Basic, very good, basic man. Prototype, but it's looking slick. Yeah. And it's funny because I was thinking about this the other day. Is like you and I both kind of on the back end, we've always, neither one of us were looking for mainstream appeal as far as what we make, what you and I make, like as far as videos and Twitch streams and all this stuff. I think you and I are very alike, that we like to be the creator's creator. So like, mm-hmm. I get way more fulfillment out of the fact that like, if someone makes it big, that was a fan of mine, I always think it's so much cooler for them in an interview. Right. If someone asks like, who's your biggest influences? And then they like, they name drop you.
Yeah.
That's the coolest thing on the planet to me.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah. I get way more fulfillment out of that than for making it myself.
Than like my own success.
Yes. Like, yeah. I want to see someone I inspired thrive and do their own thing and bring something brand new to the table. And like, so I'm way into that. Like, I'm hoping the best for all of the projects. Cause I was like, oh guys, go have at it, man. Like, I'm just excited to be like in the background and, you know, see it all come together.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Cause like, if you can use me to pick my brain and like one of those ideas pan out, like you go for it. You can have that.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
It's just awesome. The fact that, I mean, who am I to, you know, it's like bring out ideas. I don't have the resources to make that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, you know, I'll either do what I can to make that idea into fruition, or, you know, if you know, like for me, but then like has they want to do something like, okay, hey, well, let's work on this. Like, if I was able to help them out in some way and then they blow up, like that's freaking awesome, man.
Oh yeah, because I've like, in the way I've always seen it is, okay, if you and I have exactly the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because ideas are cheap. Ideas are super cheap. if we have the same idea and you make a better version of it, who really lost out? Like, I don't think there's a loser in that scenario, because now I get to play the better version of my idea anyway.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I've never really understood the, well, they stole my idea and I'm going to sue. It's like, you probably would have fucked up the idea, like, but they took it and ran with it.
Right.
I'm always
look at Facebook. Look at Facebook.
Yeah, yes. That they made a whole book and movie and all that stuff about it. Like, and I think in court, there's a quote that says, if you, what was it? Like the Vanderbilt twins or whatever said that, no, we created Facebook. And then Zuckerberg says, no, if you created Facebook, then you would have created Facebook.
Right.
Like, 100%. Yes, absolutely. That's 100% accurate. Like, if you would have, if you made Facebook, then you would have made Facebook. Genuine. Yeah. Like, 100%. And it brings up something, and it sort of ties into our common theme of, like, game reviews and, hey, if you Yu-Gi-Oh cards, you'll like these Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Because whenever you're making something, whenever you're making a product from the ground up, maybe the most important thing is a target market. Like, so, and this is where I see a lot of people kind of, they kind of misstep, because they join Twitch or they join YouTube and they want to start a podcast and stuff, but they don't have a target market in mind. They don't know who is this for. Like, you got to ask yourself, who is this for? And if you don't have an exact answer, reevaluate. Because, perfect example. I bet I could go up to any smaller Twitch streamer and be like, who is your Twitch stream for? And you know what their answer is going to be? People that love to hang out and play video games.
Yeah.
No. Who is it for? And then they'd be like, well, you know, I really like to play retro things. And I'm like, okay, you're getting closer. Who is this for? You know what I mean? You have to dial it in. A perfect example, I think, is it's Trader Joe's. You know that company, Trader Joe's?
Oh, yeah.
They sell like sauces and cups and hippie stuff and like tie-dye t-shirts and, you know.
Yeah.
So they literally have, not only do they have their target market, they have a target person that every decision that company makes is to appeal to one person. And the one person, if you ask them who the target market is, they say it's a retired university professor who wears Birkenstock sandals and jean shorts that go a slightly above the knee.
Oh, that's funny.
But that's every decision they ever make is tailored to fit that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, you have to find your target market. If, and I think Marcos and I are similar. Our target market are people that create video game content. That's our market. Yeah. That's the market for Brothering Around. That's the market for our Twitch streams. I don't care if you're just a casual fan of, you know, Street Fighter or Skyrim or whatever. Like, welcome. I hope you have fun.
Yeah.
But we're in it to entertain people that also do Twitch streams or also make podcasts. Like, we want to be that kind of inside baseball. Like, oh, finally, the two guys that know about this, you know, they're brothers. They know about the business. Mm-hmm. They know about what this takes. I want to hear what they have to say about these topics. Like, that's always been our target market. And I see people all the time making the mistake of, because if you can't nail down your target market, who are you making your stuff for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, nobody's really going to latch in and be passionate about it because there's nothing to be passionate about. It's just all a bunch of very vapid, like, well, you know, things are neat. You know, games are fun. It's like, that's not a, what are you doing?
Like, and we can even so much to go as like take a blow to ourselves. Like, say with our own YouTube channels, like, you know, Wes, you had your coffee talk and you're like, you're not sure where you want to go with the direction of the channel, and like, and you know, you reached out to the audience, like, so what, like, what would you guys would like to see? Just so you have an idea that, like, okay, these, the people that are considered like my fans, whatever you want to call it, they like to see more of this sort of thing, or like, they probably want to see you go through like a journey of something, whatever.
Yes.
And like, say with my channel, it's like, sure, a lot of it is like a lot of it is like the mobile game stuff, and then I guess that's where like I thrive.
Yeah,
but I also talk about these other things too, and I do like to make those videos. It's just a lot of it is time, a lot of it is like preparation, a lot of it is like what do I want to like in terms of like talk about this sort of subject. And then again, I'm not so much of, I guess I have a target audience, but then again, I want to go after these other target audiences as well. And I'm just one person making a channel. So like a lot of it is like my attention is towards the mobile games, or my attention is towards making this video about Dragon Ball Super that I still need to make. And I was like, I made a tweet out there just like today, like I'm having like a vision block because I'm making this video. I'm like, all right, do I want to either just review this latest episode and talk about what my thoughts are, or do I want to make this video for the person who has yet to start watching Dragon Ball Super and wants to get caught up on what's going on?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can see that I do want to do that catch-up video, but like, if I want to make that catch-up video, I need to talk about what happened before all these other stories in the, you know, in previous weeks or months happen before they can get caught up to this current arc. So like I'm juggling things, and it gets frustrating at times. But then, you know, just to reach out for people and ask, like, okay, all right, maybe I can focus on those people that just want to see, like, they want to get caught up, or give them a reason.
Yeah.
You know, they should just start from the latest arc. You know,
totally.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's a hard deal, and like finding your target market is kind of the hardest part. And but once you figure it out, it makes everything else so much easier. Yeah. And what I would say, like for your channel in particular, I would say your bread and butter is mobile. No question. But the cool thing about it is you're still able to do those Dragon Ball videos. You're still able to do, you know, the Marvel wrap-up type stuff. Because what I think that does is you build a trusting fan base with mobile games. But then you're sprinkling in your other interests. So what that does is it's a nice refresher. You know, that way if you made two or three intro to mobile game videos, then you got, hey, let me talk about the new Thor trailer or whatever. And then, but then you'll get people that may not have been interested in that off the beaten path thing to look at it and be like, oh, well, you know, I like Marco's stuff. Mm-hmm. Marco does really good phone videos. He's a big fan of this Marvel thing. Maybe I should check it out too. And then you start building not only that, but more goodwill, like a more loyal fan base. You get you get people that are in the whole journey with you, and then they're just excited to see whatever video you come out with, no matter what it is. They want to be there. They want to be like, yes, I want to see the new Marco video. I want to see the new Nerd in the Bay thing.
And that's where me and Kami, me and Wes wants to be at, where we focus our videos and at the people that they just want to see the video, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Bigo.
Like, and it's a refreshment that, say, like Wes has been doing all these, like, these videos basically on video games and like Kami logs and all that stuff, but he can do like a different kind of video as a refresher, just to change the pace a little bit and then go back to what he was doing before. And then like with a renewed interest and refresh mind.
And that's exactly, that is verbatim exactly what's happened, because I did the coffee talk thing and, you know, I kind of took a little break and got my head around some stuff. I'm literally editing two videos right now. So
Okay, that's awesome.
One of them has over 200 gigs of footage. Like, I blitzed out on this thing. It's not quite done yet, but I mean, we're talking about, I think I'm like 11 or 12 hours into this game. I'm almost done with it. But this is the one game I'm really going to try to actually beat. Not 100%, but I'm going to beat it. That way I have a full, I kind of know what I'm already going to say. But it's basically a new West versus backlog. And but as I was making it and as I was doing this, there's a reason why, if you check my Twitter, and I was actually going to, this was going to be our last topic after we cover this, but I talked about, what do people consider retro?
And right. You've been asking.
So that's a little a hint about what's coming. So I'm filming a West versus backlog, standard West versus backlog, but then I'm going to do a spinoff series. And the spinoff series is going to be a slightly different format. I've already made the title cards and all the visuals of it. And I think people are going to flip out when they see it, because it's easily the best thing I've ever done. Like, as far as production and all that stuff, like, this is on par. Well, actually, I think it goes past my Game of the Year things. Like, I think I finally got past that one threshold. Like, my Game of the Year is my new benchmark. Like, all of my videos from now on have to meet that same level of quality in my mind. And sure, they're going to take longer, but I'm going to have more fun making them, because there's going to be a lot to dig into. Because, I mean, I can tell you, in the West versus backlog I have right now, I have retro footage. I draw comparisons to games that came out 20 years ago. And I'll be like, I don't think this game is like what everyone says it is. I think it's more like such and such, and let me show you why.
And boom.
And then, so you're going to see old retro games. You're going to see that type of stuff. So that's kind of why I was asking. But that bred way, once I started doing that format, I was like, oh, I could turn it into a whole different thing if I wanted to. But it was a big enough shift that I had to rebrand. And I was like, let me just do a spinoff. Like, spinoff series are always awesome. Like, I'm a fan of getting the foundation and the formula down and then putting that slight little tweak on it. And I really think that, like, I'm really excited to do to publish the new West versus backlog, but I'm kind of more excited about the next video that's already, you know, I'm already working on, like, because that's going to be the one that I think I have that, like, gut instinct feeling, like, I bet this is the thing. I bet this is the thing that once people see it, they're like, oh God, it took you 8 years to get here, but you're finally here. You know, like, you finally started doing the stuff that you were supposed to be doing the whole time.
Yeah. Cool, man.
So That's exciting. I'll probably have the One West versus Backlog up by next week, hopefully, by the time we record again.
Okay.
And then the one after shouldn't be too far behind it. I'm going to use similar editing styles and stuff, but I'm going to do some new fancy tricks that I learned, and it'll just be a really cool experience, and it'll be kind of a nice time capsule type thing, and I'm excited about that. But yeah, so I guess moving on, before our last major topic about retro stuff, speaking kind of retro, I guess, that Thor trailer, man.
Oh, what'd you think about that Thor trailer, dude?
Because I still need to read. I bought, oh God, what was the name of the Thor book that I have? The digital one. Remember when I bought all my Comixology stuff?
Yeah, Mighty Thor?
Maybe it was the, let me actually log in real quick and see. That way I can tell you exactly which one it was. It might have been, let me bring up my books. But apparently it was this very, like, very, very popular Thor run. Oh, the God of Thunder. Yeah, the God Butcher. So, apparently that is kind of...
Read a bunch of Thunder, whatever.
Yeah, like, yeah, God of Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the one that's supposed to be, like, the Thor story. I don't know, like, what Thor Ragnarok is based off of, but I like the fact that it has a sense of humor about what it's doing. I like the fact that it has the 80s retro throwback, or even 70s, really. It's like the He-Man Masters of the Universe Jack Kirby logo.
There. Yeah.
It looks really good. Like, I almost wish they would have kept the funny part out of the trailer and, like, just put it in the movie, because that would have been the highlight of the movie, maybe.
Yeah, that would have been great. Yeah, with Thor movies, I've been hearing a lot of, they got their comedy bit from like Guardians of the Galaxy, and I guess I can sort of agree with that, but at the same time, the Thor movies, at least the ones I watched, I mean, I'm delving into it too deep or just looking at it too deeply. There's always like a very tint of like humor.
Oh yeah, the force, like, for sure.
And I feel like that's pretty much, at least with that joke, you know, like, oh yeah, I know this guy from work. It felt like it was the same level of like that Thor movie humor that I got from the other movies. At least that's what I feel. Other people were like, oh, that's totally Guardians of the Galaxy. And
see, I think it shows that because even the first Thor movie, like, they had the scene in the diner to where he ate scrambled eggs for an hour, and they were like, you eat so much food. And like, so it had this tinge of it, but he kind of took himself seriously. But then as, you know, then Thor, the second Thor movie, and then Avengers, and all this stuff started breaking down his facade of trying to be a badass all the time. So like, I think there's a long form. There's like a longer form Thor story happening here. And I think that kind of sealed the deal that now he's just one of the guys. Like, so whenever Hulk came out, he's like, oh, it's my bro. Like, it turned it into that. That's what I saw it as. It's more of like, okay, they're really embracing Thor becoming part of this bigger group of people.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about it. I was like, okay, I like the vibe to where he knows who he is, but he understands he's in a place where he's not necessarily welcome anymore, but he's going to try to make the best of it. And, you know,
he's down for an adventure.
He's Thor. He likes to get a little drunk and rowdy, and that's what it is. Okay. And that's, if I can't think of any sort of like more Viking God thing to do than that, like, of course he's just going to hang out. Yeah. The Thor stuff. I mean, just Marvel in general seems to be getting, they're finally coming into their own. I say that, and they've already made like trillions of dollars, but
it
feels like they're so, they finally, like, they're comfortable with it. They've made their long plan. They're not afraid to kind of take their time and kind of enjoy each separate part as this bigger whole. And Yeah, I think it's good on them. I think the less seriously they take themselves, the better. Because comics are that form of escapism. But what's nice about it is, let's say you just kind of have that nice jovial sense of humor throughout your films. Then whenever you need to pull out the drama, like you need to bring up the waterworks, you need to bring up, the sad scenes and stuff, they're going to be way more impactful.
Right.
Because you're not dealing with the whole DC universe of everybody's depressed and crying all the time.
Super
then
serious.
Then what happens when people need to be depressed and crying for an emotional scene? Well, everyone's been crying the whole fucking movie, so it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Like, now it lost all of its weight. But whenever you have Marvel and, here's the happy-go-lucky Thor. Now what happens whenever Thor is in a super serious, like, life or death?
Right.
You don't want to see him get hurt. You don't want to see him. It builds this affinity towards the character. Yeah. And I think that's why those movies work so well. They can kind of rehash the same movie 8 times if they wanted to. But each one, they're willing to kind of go the extra step and maybe shake things up. Like, they cut off Thor's hair, for God's sakes. It's like, Thor's hair is kind of the thing, right? That's part of his whole gimmick. Mm-hmm. So they just got rid of it. And I think it's the reverse of what happened, because I still haven't seen Star Wars Rogue One yet. But the biggest harp I saw from people about Rogue One is it felt like it was impersonating a Star Wars movie, because it would do the whole, like, you remember Stormtroopers? Well, we got Stormtroopers. And you remember the Death Star? Well, now they're going to try to destroy the Death Star. Do you remember X-Wings? Well, this movie has X-Wings. Like, it was just that for 2.5 hours. And, and I haven't seen it, so that might not be a fair comparison, but it did seem like it was trying to get by on the laurels of, Star Wars? Well, here's Darth Vader. And it's
You're not wrong. It does feel like episode, what was that? Episode 4, part 1. That's what it felt like. Oh,
gotcha, yeah.
And then actual episode 4 was, part 2 type of thing.
I see.
You're not wrong, but, like, I believe there was, like, somebody edited, I guess maybe the ending of Rogue One, and then go straight directly to episode 4.
Yeah.
And it was seamless. Like, miss a beat.
That's cool.
So, like, if you come in understanding, like, this is a prequel before episode 4, then everything is fine. But, like, if you're expecting, like, a whole different movie where it was, like, years way back before episode 4, then, like, no, that's not the type of movie you're going to be coming into.
Gotcha. And even the fact that they felt it necessary to stick that close to episode 4.
Yeah.
Like, even that's like, Star Wars is literally a galaxy. It's a giant universe of planets. And they decided to tell part 1 of the story they told in the 70s.
Right.
Like, I wonder if they're just trying to build their confidence back up with Star Wars movies, or what they're doing. And now, they're doing a Han Solo, young Han Solo movie.
Right.
And I'm like, how necessary is this? Like, I don't care how Han Solo got his blaster.
I haven't seen this series, but I tend to think that, like, Rogue One was like the series of, like, Clone Wars, where all of, the entire series of Clone Wars was about this one, like, battle or something.
Yeah.
The animation Clone Wars.
Oh, right.
It was about this one battle, and then, like, you just saw different sides of it. Like, that's what I tend to think about Rogue One.
Oh, gotcha. Kind of the Suikoden separate main character type thing.
Something like that.
You see the same story through a different set of eyes.
So, hero from Suikoden 1, on to Suikoden 2, and he's just fishing. Whatever.
Because he's in the background like, hi, guys. Yeah, and, like, but with Marvel, it seems like they're willing to, like, hell, they're willing to chop off Thor's hair and then make him into a freaking gladiator for some reason. And, like, all right.
just wanted to say, as of like Thor, his hair is chopped off on the comics. But there's a reason for that. If you ever get to that far.
Yeah.
Because it's, I believe, because there's two Thor books. There's, I believe, Mighty Thor, which is like the woman Thor that has the actual hammer. And then there's Unworthy Thor, where, you basically, I can link you to how Thor becomes unworthy because of an event. But there's two Thor books right now. And cutting his hair short was one of the things that actually shows in the comic.
Isn't that basically kind of like how whenever a samurai loses a fight, cut off the ponytail type thing?
Yeah, or like, that's like the Japanese culture. Like, say, like, you got heartbroken or like things, like something traumatic happened. You're like cutting off your intentions or like your...
But you're beginning a
your
new...
emotions. Like, new beginning, new change.
So if you have the meat incident... from Terrace House, right. You have to make amends.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh, somebody actually did that in Terrace House too.
Really?
I don't know. Oh, I don't think you got that far.
Yeah, though. I didn't get that far.
Something happened where somebody did cut off their hair, not like completely bald, but like they cut their hair shorter than it was because. They had to get rid of their intentions or whatever.
That's
like
so
their...
dramatic.
Yeah,
<It's> they had dramatic. To do it. Man.
They had to do it.
Oh, that's amazing,
dude.
I need to get back on it. Back on that Terrace House.
I know. I haven't watched Hawaii yet. So, Aloha State. So,
oh man,
it's there.
This is there. But with a... All right, so to kind of end this thing, we got about 10 minutes left on it. So I asked online what people thought retro meant, like as far as video games.
Right.
Like, when you hear retro, what does it make you think of? Does it make you think of stuff you grew up on, or does it make you think of... Like, is there a set timeline in your mind where something becomes retro? Because, and the reason why I bring this up is, if you listen to classic rock stations now, like, they put Sum 41 on that's classic rock classic, stations. Yeah, Blink 182 is now classic rock.
Yeah.
Which is nuts to me. Absolutely insane. And I heard a lot of varying opinions about it. Some people said, oh, retro is just like regular Nintendo, only 8-bit.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was kind of the line in the sand. You have your Amiga, you have, ColecoVision, Atari. That's retro. That's it. The throwback, it has to be the original of the thing. So if it's, it can't be Carl's Jr. anymore, it has to be Hardee's. Type stuff. Like, it has to, I'm saying? You have to get it from the source, and nothing else, anything after that is just an evolution. So retro is only the originals. And I was like, all right. And then I got another response, which I thought was interesting. And it was that it's not the current generation. It's not the generation before. But anything before that is now considered retro. So PlayStation 4 is current. The PlayStation 3 is not retro. However, anything PlayStation 2 and before is now retro.
Yeah. I can agree with that. I mean, a part of me doesn't really believe PlayStation 2 is considered retro.
Yeah.
But that's a part of me, though. Because the retro timeline moves forward, basically, as we keep moving forward.
Yeah.
So for me, considering retro would be like, I would begrudgingly say like, PS2 backwards would be retro. Xbox, original Xbox. Any of that stuff, GameCube.
Yeah.
That would be considered retro.
Right, because like, perfect, GameCube is one of those that I'm like, man, GameCube feels... new
like it
enough.
Just came out or something.
Yeah. And the thing is, but here's where it all kind of went topsy turvy. Cause at first I was like, no, I don't think GameCube and PS2 and Xbox One are retro. But then someone brought up they were like, well, what about the Dreamcast? And I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's where it gets muddy, is because
yeah.
there's a whole history behind that. And but because, of course, I would definitely say Sega Saturn is retro. No question.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
PlayStation definitely. 1, absolutely.
Yeah.
PS2, I don't know. But then Dreamcast.
Yeah, right? I'm very iffy about that.
But then Dreamcast. Yes. To me, yes, because it stopped being in production. They didn't make games for it for a long time. Like, yes, totally. It's a time capsule thing. It's beautiful, and it's retro. It's completely throwback. Yeah. But
That's a little weird that production is what stops it, or what either stops it or keeps it. Would it be considered retro?
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about PS2. Like it was still, I guess. Maybe like a year or two ago, they were still selling PS2s.
See, that might be why.
I think because that's what it was.
The life cycle selling. Of the PS2 was fucking insane.
Yeah.
That's like a 20-year on sale. Like, that thing's been a thing forever. Right. You know, I think literally, what was it, 2003? When did it come out? Like, 2001 or something.
Yeah, I want to say like 2000.
Yeah, 2000, 2001, because it came out right around the same time that The Matrix came out on DVD, because that's what sparked the big mass sale of PS2s.
Oh, yeah, because you're able to watch movies on your PS2.
Your DVDs, and like Matrix was the highest grossing DVD ever, because that was what everyone wanted a DVD player for, was The Matrix, and then PS2 was the most reliable, cost-efficient DVD player. So... Yeah. Those two really worked hand in hand to make the whole industry change forever. And so that's because in my mind, I'm like, oh, yeah, the first DVD player was a PlayStation 2. Of course, that's retro. Mm. But then you think back and you're like, they made like Madden 2014 on the PS2.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they made a version of that for, I need to see what the most recent Madden is, because I bet it is something like that, like 2013, you know, 2014.
You know what? At the same time, I just remember this. Like, we were hearing reports that that the Dreamcast was still selling in like South America, like to this day. Like, I know, you know, it's not exactly America, but the fact that they were still selling as well.
That's right.
You know, and then like. With more up to date games, like what games were there coming out over?
Oh wow, right? Huh? Yeah,
yeah. Like they were playing like an Xbox One game on this Dreamcast, because for whatever reason they were able to do that or something. I mean, not to say that that was exact fact, but like I was hearing reports that the Dreamcast was still selling in South America. So like, I have to wonder what kind of like Frankenstein creation that they had.
Right.
That they were able to play current gen games or something with the Dreamcast, you know.
That's wild.
I mean, I don't know. That's weird. Now that I remember that,
like, so why, that's,
okay, well, do I still consider it as retro or
That's where it all gets very blurry. But it's an interesting thing, because depending on who you ask, you always get a different answer.
Yeah,
and. But then I kind of put my line in the sand. I was like, okay, I have to choose. We talked about target market before. This is the same thing. Mm-hmm. I have to figure out my definition of what is retro. So I said, anything, you know, GameCube, PlayStation 2, or Xbox, old. Like, anything from there, older. Like, that's retro. That's where I'm making my line in the sand. And then, you know, depending on how relevant, like, a later end PS2 game was, that's where it gets, like, the games that came out at the very end of its life cycle. Because, let's see, God of War 2 came out on PS2. But I think God of War 3 was PS3?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that makes sense.
You just reminded me of the Bouncer. I'm like, well, the Bouncer still looked pretty good.
It really does. That was a freaking launch PS2 game. That was a launch PS2 game. Yeah. It's funny. I started rewatching our Let's Play of it
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, yeah.
It's freaking hilarious whenever I'm like, how do I do these combos?
But it's a
time capsule, that sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know if it's just me getting older or whatever, but I'm starting to get that hankering for, like, I need to just bathe myself in nostalgia. Like, I need to, like, enough so that I have been looking at reviews for, like, okay, so what's a good, like, all-in-one retro game box that's not a Retron? Because those Retrons are kind of janky.
The
Retron 5 that can play, you know, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. And I was like, do I really want to start collecting shit again? Like, having a bunch of just nasty game cartridges hanging out in my house?
Yeah, those have, like, terrible emulation, right? The Retron 5 and all?
Yeah, I think so. To where it would, like, speed up frames, and it would do really weird graphical things, and the HDMI output doesn't work very well. And I mean, and it sounds bad, and I know you're not, this is kind of a taboo thing to say, but at that point I would just get an emulator, and because you can customize an emulator to run it more accurately.
Just have a work, like a compatible controller, and you should be good.
Yeah, should be good to
go. I mean, that's what it comes down to, because we don't have a viable, like, capable, good retro machine that could still play those games, like, well, and
I think there's
whatever.
There's one machine that can, and I think it's only for regular Nintendo games, but it's called the Analog. It's literally called the Analog NT. But it does actual perfect emulation, like 99.9% accurate, even on, like, slowdown, like, all of it. But it's $400.
Oh, wow.
I would rather just go to a garage sale and buy a regular Nintendo from somebody for, like, buy the tenner. Original.
Yeah.
And like, a big bucket of games for, like, $5.
Right.
$400. But the thing about it is it has perfect HDMI output to 4K TVs and stuff. So, like... Yeah, I get it. Like, if you're a true connoisseur and you're a historian and you want to archive that stuff forever, that's a viable way to go. It's expensive, but hey, now you have a machine that plays NES titles perfectly forever. Right.
Play Night Trap whenever I want.
Yeah, I can go in and play Crystallis. I'm gonna go play. Yeah, I'm gonna go play Tiny Toons.
Oh man,
that game was kind of rad, though. I grew up playing that game.
Tiny Toons is pretty legit.
Pretty good, man. It's pretty good times. But yeah, and like, I'm starting to get interested in that, like the differences between emulations, and like, oh well, what made the PlayStation different than the Saturn, and what made the, like, the insides of the stuff? So that's actually kind of a sneak peek of what my new series is, but. Right. But yeah, fun stuff.
Cool, man.
Fun stuff. But yeah, I think that's gonna wrap it up. Episode, what is this, 22?
23.
23? Yeah. Oh yeah, because now we split the timeline because we did a two-parter.
That's right.
So now we turned into Star Trek. We turned into people have the arguments about how many episodes are there of Star Trek. And they're like, well, is it 354? There's a 355 because they count the two-parter as one episode. It's like, now that's what we got to do. But I think you're right. I think we're on episode 23?
Michael Jordan.
Yes. So we will be episode 23. The MJ special right here. So it's good. It's good that we discussed nostalgia during the Michael Jordan episode. That's good stuff. But that's about it, gang. That's our time. My name is Wes Gardner. You can hit me up at commiedehobo.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com/commiedehobo. And that man over there is Mr. Nerd in the Bay, Marco Flores. You can hit him up at twitter.com/MarcoPolo177. Also, twitter.com/nerdinthebay. Go check it out on YouTube, all those mobile games. Keep an eye out on my YouTube channel. We're going to have some new videos up shortly.
Yeah.
Some good stuff. And you guys will have to let me know what you think about them, because it could shape the future. That's a lot of shaping the future. Yeah. Change in the future will be like, I was going to say we're going to be like Thor, but Thor has nothing to do with changing the future. we'll get
what the hell are you doing in Raw?
Yeah. Perfect. All right, guys, that is our time. We will see you next week here on Brothering Around.
All right. These guys.